At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Hello and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show where we explore the many paths of transformation and aim to mine a few nuggets of gold that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature, even though sometimes that might feel counterintuitive, like the nightingale, a bird that sings in the dark. I'm JJ, otherwise known as The Practical Alchemist. Thank you so much for joining me. Today's show is brought to you in association with NasalGuard, the drug-free nasal gel that uses electrostatic technology to block harmful airborne contaminants. It blocks indoor and outdoor allergens, so it's great for travellers as well as people with pet allergies and hay fever, which many of us are enduring at the moment. More on that later. First, we've just experienced June's new moon once again, a time of new beginnings, and I wonder if anyone's been thinking about training or retraining in a supportive role. Spirituality is now recognised as an important element in our well-being, so I was delighted to discover a new concept and indeed vocational course in caregiving. The Spiritual Companions Trust have developed and are rolling out a unique qualification, a diploma in spiritual coaching and caregiving, which they say is designed for people of all faiths and none. The initiative is led by my guest today, Dr. William Bloom, an educator, activist and well-known author on spirituality. He's the founder and director of the Spiritual Companions Trust, which has been set up as an educational charity focusing on a holistic and person-centered approach to spirituality and health. I asked William what prompted him to develop this initiative, whether he's reacted to a growing need in society.
No, not really. What actually happened was I've got three great things that happened in my life that propelled me forward with this kind of work. And just to say, I'm well known in a very small pond. So anybody may never have heard of me. The first thing that propelled me forward was I was brought up in a kind of medical family. My dad was a psychiatrist, a medical doctor. My mum was a psychologist, journalist, and they were both atheists. And they were both quite traumatized by having just come out of prisoner of war camp. They spent 3 years during the war in a Japanese prisoner of war camp. But from a very early age, from 4 or 5, I can remember, I had a sense that there was some kind of spiritual dimension to life. I was confused of people going to church or temple because it seemed to me the blue sky itself was the most wonderful dome of a temple that you could possibly have. But I couldn't talk to my parents about it because any time I talked to my parents about these inner things that I was experiencing and feeling, they would kind of look at me in a kind of condescending and patronizing way and go, oh, dad, you know. So I was brought up, I was happy to be brought up in an atheistic family because nobody was laying any religious tricks on me. But at the same time, I was having my own experiences. So I'm part of the modern world, and there are many, many people like me who have an inbuilt spirituality. They don't belong to a faith tradition. They may well have had parents that either dismissed them as being silly or parents who belong to a faith tradition and didn't want to hear anything else. And I belong to that other huge section of society of people who have a sense of, yes, there is something beautiful and wonderful about life. There's a mystery there. Okay, some people want to call it God. Some people want to call it a great mysterious ocean of benevolence. Other people want to call it the Tao or the goddess. You know, there are many words for it. But many of us have that experience. And so I've been exploring that through my life in my own way. A couple of other big things that really influenced me that fed into the Spiritual Companions Trust and our diploma in spiritual coaching and caregiving. One is that I was a really earnest meditator for a while, Ernest Ernie the meditator. But hooray, I always came out of meditation feeling better. And I learned to self-manage my kind of sensitivity and emotions that are arising through meditation. And I always felt, as I said, better for having meditated. And one day I was watching Horizon program on the people who just won the Nobel Prize for their discovery of endorphins. Endorphins being the hormones, neuropeptides that the body releases when the person is in a good mood or sees something they like. And I went, and the guy who'd received one of the Nobel Prizes with his partner was wearing a white coat and a clipboard and a stethoscope around his neck. And this was a BBC Horizon program. And he was very serious.
Very serious. Yeah. Yeah.
An American academic. And he was asked by the BBC anchor person, what kind of people produce endorphins? And let's just be clear, endorphins, orphans, morphine produced inside the body, endorphins, right? Very powerful neuropeptide inside the body. He said the people who produce the most endorphins, this primary hormone of well-being and happiness, are folk. And he didn't like to say this, and you could watch him frowning. They seem to be people who have a kind of inner smile, right? A kind of inner smile. Mm-hmm. And I had a eureka moment because I went, the one group of folk who are trained and educated in an inner smile and developing an inner smile are meditators, because we're asked to have a soft and compassionate attitude to ourselves. And I put two and two together and I went, so when I'm sitting there having kind thoughts about the world and about myself and I start to feel good, one of the things that's happening is there's actually a biological, physiological thing going on inside my body, which is the production of endorphins. And I went, okay, there's the link between spiritual practice, mindfulness, meditation, and good things for the body. So I'm one of the flag bearers from several decades ago that went, hey, mind-body medicine actually works. It's a real thing. Now, the third big thing that really fed into spiritual construct was I ran a program at St. James's Church, Piccadilly in London, several decades ago. And it was a year-long program in which I had a group of 20 people. And I said to them, let's explore what the different religious traditions do in their practices and what is actually going on inside us when we do the practices. Let's see what they have in common. And I had a couple of groups over several years exploring what are people actually experiencing inside religion and spirituality. And there was this, another eureka moment for me. One of the eureka moments was that Horizon program. Oh, endorphins when you do the inner smile. The other one was I was sitting in this circle of people and I posed an inquiry to the group. I said, in what circumstances do you most easily connect with, feel that there's a wonder and energy to life? And because I was Ernest Ernie, the meditator, what I was wanting was for all my students to say, meditation, sir, and get 10 out of 10 from me. But in actual fact, what happened in the circle was the first person said, well, when I'm sitting watching television with my cat on my lap.
Oh, that's lovely. I mean, not necessarily the watching television bit, but the cat on that.
And then part of me died in that moment. As a teacher, that was not what I wanted to hear, right? Second person, when do you most easily connect with the wonder and energy of life? And it was, well, on my exercise bike. Third person, out in nature. Fourth person, by the ocean. Fifth person, listening to music outside and bird song, right? And by the time we'd gone round this circle of 20 people, I went, okay, I need to deconstruct my earnest, earny ideas about how people connect with the wonder and energy of life, right? And I need now, from henceforth, the most important question to ask people when they're exploring spirituality is, for you, not forget about anybody else has told you to do, forget that you're a Christian or a Muslim or a Jew or Hindu, whatever it is. Just for you, when do you most easily connect with the wonder of life? And that's the beginning of a very real conversation with people. And I've sat in groups like with, I remember once being in a kind of party with, there was, I was actually standing with a rabbi and a bishop and an imam. It was a kind of interfaith place. And you could feel the kind of frozen lightness of the conversation. And I just said to them, I said, hi guys, when do you most easily connect with God? And the conversation immediately went to when I'm caring for people, when I'm in nature, and had very little to do with formal worship.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that led me to, you know, because you phrased the very first question to me was I responding to a need? And no, I'm not responding to a need. It's I'm responding to what I think is actually an obvious fact and truth that's been lost by in religious warfare. It's been lost because atheism puts itself in a kind of conflict with religion and spirituality. But in actual fact, in my experience, even talking to the most rigid atheists or the most rigid Christian fundamentalists, if you start with the question, actually, hey, when do you actually connect with the wonder and energy of life? And they'll tell you when and where. And then I say, in the spiritual Commander's Trust, the next one thing will be, what do you like to call it? And an atheist or an agnostic will say, well, I don't know what it is. You know, and I would say, and I would then say, well, funny enough, that's exactly what all the mystics of all the different religions say when asked what it actually is. They go, I don't know, it's a mystery, but mystery with a capital M.
Yes, yeah.
Mm. So the Spiritual Companions Trust emerged out of that stream of thinking. And there are a lot of very nice, independent-minded folk who came in as colleagues and companions and friends to help build it, all of whom went, yeah, of course. And in the 20th century, now the 21st century, the way to approach spirituality is with this person-centered, individualized inquiry, but always with a sense that what people are going to connect with is something that's genuinely good and life-enhancing, and that there are strategies. For example, you find them in mindfulness and breathing and the psychological attitudes, which help deepen the experience of connecting with the wonder of life. So we started to teach that. And the diploma we run, it was originally being planned as a master's qualification at Westminster University. But we found that pitching it at master's level, that's postgrad level, mm-hmm. meant that people were thinking about it rather than experiencing it. And so, which meant that they were kind of lifting off up into their heads and away from the kind of heart-centered sensation, feeling of what it's like to be out in nature and connecting with the wonder of life, or when you're caring for your grandchildren. Or It's defeated the object. Mm-hmm. We spent 2 years working at putting a master's together, and then we just went, no, this is not going to work, because everybody's going up into their heads and basically dissociating from an embodied real experience. So we then went the other direction, which was, let's make it a vocational course, let's practitioners. And we went through all the due diligence that needs to be done to be on the Ofqual register. So the whole thing is 100% kosher. It's real.
Yes. Yeah.
And the course itself, it's saying, yes, we're training folk to be spiritual coaches and caregivers, but you can't do that unless you yourself know how to look after yourself in the first place.
Of course, yeah, of course.
And we will model to you how to help people into that, and we start with that question I was talking about a few minutes mm-hmm. ago, which is, when do you most easily connect with the wonder and energy of life? And I've had situations where some men have said, I never connect with the wonder and energy of life. And I say, just close your eyes for a second. and what's your favorite sport? And you suddenly see a little smile come on their face. And they go, where are you? Oh, well, the golf course. I'm watching rugger, whatever, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I go, okay, let's start there.
Yeah.
Because everybody has their own way, but they're not, the way religion is set up, it's kind of, here's a set of beliefs. You know, get in here. You've got to believe in Jesus. So you've got to believe in, repeat the Quran. Or you've got to repeat these prayers. Or Buddhism says.
You so must rigid. It's so rigid.
It is. And even though the very liberal-minded inside them can be very loose and very big-hearted, they haven't adopted this way of inquiring. Though some of them will. Some of the traditional retreatants, the monks and the nuns of all traditions, they know very well just to be very quiet with someone and say, hello, when do you, well, they may use language that's a bit confusing, like, when do you feel God? And people go, would you, God, I don't like the word God. But that's how it all started. So the course itself is, a lot of the focus is on, okay, let's get you sorted.
Yeah.
And that means we spend a little while making sure everybody's doing what works best for them, and then make sure they do it every day. So it actually anchors in as a health benefit for them, and they come up against their resistance to it and all that kind of stuff. But they're in a lovely support group of people who all of us experience that kind of, it's like giving up sugar or stopping coffee and having to get into a daily routine, you know. And as we go through the course, because they have the experience and we're looking after each other in a way. And there's a lot of reflective writing about how's this going for you, right? And people come out of it usually quite a cool cohort of friends, actually.
Oh, I think that sounds wonderful. And I'm sure it will be a success. Time for a short break right now, though. We'll be back with more on the trust and who might benefit from the course right after these messages.
The station that makes you feel good.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and my guest today, William Bloom, founder and director of the Spiritual Companions Trust. We heard all about the course before the break, so I asked William who the typical diploma candidate might be.
We've got two groups that we have in our hearts and minds. One is all those folk who instinctively have a sense of the spiritual dimension of life and are looking for an open-hearted, open-minded approach to develop and deepen their practice.
Yeah.
And who know that part of spirituality, it has there's a very strong dynamic to care for others. And that will manifest not necessarily in being a carer, either professional or volunteer, but that will manifest in being a good neighbor. It will manifest in being kind to people when you're in a difficult queue at the supermarket. You know, there'll be people who have an instinct for caring and also have a sense of the wonder and magic of life and spirituality, and they want to deepen it and inquire more closely into it. So that's one group. And then coming out of that group, they are able to be in almost any situation with anyone who is, I'm going to use the word suffering.
Yeah.
And to one degree or another, we're all suffering. one way or another, but our folk know how to be with them with a very grounded, non-intrusive vibe of, hello, I'm just here with you, supporting you.
Yeah, non-judgmental as well.
Absolutely, but non-interfering as
yes.
well.
Yes.
But being present to a conversation. You know, a lot of people have this skill already, and they go, oh, no, I don't. And I say, I bet you might have been with a member of your family who was ill, and you just sat in a chair beside their bed reading a book. Mm. And just being there was a comforting presence.
Mm.
So that skill is built into us. And it's just becoming a little bit more conscious about that. And, you know, there's also a historical thing here. We're only just coming into a global culture. And you know, we've had 2,000 years of religions in conflict with each other and still in conflict with each other. And there's this emerging movement of folk who are, who are spiritual, but not necessarily religious.
Mm-hmm.
Spiritual, but not religious. And it's a growing movement. And if we were to fast forward 100, 200 years, this movement of spiritual, not religious, will obviously be huge. I mean, it's already 30, 40% of the population,
yeah.
according to various polls, right?
Yes.
But it's not organized. It doesn't have places of worship, all that kind of thing. So we are an early part of the movement that creates some proper space that represents spiritual, not religious folk.
And people do need a lot of help these days, I think. And that was one of the reasons why I asked you the question first. People need a lot of help these days because there are a lot of challenges right now for a lot of people, health-wise and otherwise. And so I think the need for this is huge right now. You know, I'm sure that it's something which you will be getting a lot of inquiries about. Have you already found that?
Yeah, it's building, absolutely building. I think, you know, you talk about the challenges, but there's some good news in universities and this area of scholarship is that there's over 3,000 peer-reviewed academic papers that point out the health benefits of spirituality. There's the Center for Spirituality and Healthcare at Duke University is where most of these papers are collated and organized. And there's a huge body of evidence for the health benefits that people live longer. And a lot of it's to do with life is very confusing for a lot of people. And the usual ambitions for money, status, clothes, posh home, posh car, posh partner, whatever it is, all that stuff, there's a certain point where people deep in their hearts go, it's a bit hollow. And when I'm facing the normal challenges of life, it's that just to become more successful just doesn't hack it in terms of, but if you have a sense of the spiritual dimension of life and you have a sense that life is a journey in which we all of us in one way or another are becoming just a little bit wiser, a little bit more loving, a little bit more aware, a little bit more compassionate, that's the journey. And that's what gives our life meaning.
Yeah.
Then that thread of meaningfulness can carry us through many of the crises because the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune are going to hit all of us.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, we're all going to be ill at times. We're
yeah.
all going to have disastrous relationships at times. Most of us will have financial problems at times. Most of us will, you know, we'll have high anxiety when getting a new home and all the
exactly,
rest of it.
Exactly, yeah.
And as my mum said about having children, have children lose peace of mind forever, you know.
But
if in the middle of all that you have this sense of, no, there's a wonder and energy and mystery to life, and the real thread of my life is on planet Earth, is kind of an education where I'm learning to be more loving, more present, more grounded, more compassionate. And I think one of the elements I want to bring in here also that we haven't mentioned is that I think in the spiritual, not religious group of folk, millions, there's a curiosity. There's a sense of curiosity which says, well, actually, yeah, okay, I love Jesus, or the Quran is deeply inspiring, but my heart, my soul, my mind is curious. Human creatures, we're curious. We like to sniff around and look at new things. And it doesn't help that historically religions have said to their adherents, no, you're not allowed to look around. No, don't sniff over there, because if you do, we're going to, you know, we'll have to exorcise you or even burn you, right?
Yeah.
Nowadays, we live on a global village where we've got access to this huge amounts of information and culture on television and through the web and on our smartphones. Just like everything's there. So to get fixed in one particular rigid place may be a very safe and good place for some people, hooray, but a lot of us have a curiosity. We like to kind of scope it out. What's life really about?
Yeah, and I've noticed more and more people are questioning things that have been laid down for hundreds and maybe thousands of years. And, you know, because people are curious and new information's coming out, particularly in religions and that sort of thing. And Christianity, I've been actually personally watching a lot of work about the true interpretation of what might have been written in the original texts of the Bible. And it's fascinating. It's fascinating. And yet, you know, there was a time maybe not so long ago when even to mention that would have had somebody cancelled and, you know, really shut down. But now there's a lot more tolerance for it, I think.
Yeah, I think curiosity is one of the very best human instincts.
Yeah.
And to have that shut down is not good. Not good for individuals, not good for society.
No, any kind of shutdown or lockdown is not good, I think, for society or individuals. But that takes us on to something else, which is not what we're talking about here today. But actually, it is what we're talking about here today, because companionship, you've called it the spiritual companionship trust. So you're acknowledging, I guess, how important that is, coming together with other people.
That was partly the motivation for using the word companion. But there was another motivation, actually, which was that this is an interesting area, actually. I'm hoping you and your listeners will be interested, right?
I'm sure.
We'll see, won't we? The relationship between a priest and a member of the congregation, or between a healer and someone who needs healing, or between someone who's a chaplain and someone who's seeking spiritual advice, there's a power dynamic in there which one of the folk is slightly higher up in the status and the other is a supplicant and of lower status. And that's built into the hierarchies of most of the religions. And the further up the hierarchy you go, the bigger the hat and the more magnificent the robes and the more lowly the little person in the congregation. So one of the things we're clear about is that there's a wonderful tradition in a lot of religious approaches where you know that essentially when you're helping someone, the best way to do it is just to be a friendly companion. Without that power dynamic of, hey, I'm here to help you, right? It's just, I got some information that may be of use to you. And with a bit of luck, I've got a good vibe. My heart is open and I'm a good support person for you, right? And you can unload if you need to, but I'm not a psychotherapist and I'm not a priest, but I'm someone who, in my own life, I'm exploring the wonder and energy of life and finding out more. I'm curious and I'm here in this moment with you. I'm still quiet. I'm listening. I'm your companion.
Yeah.
I'm your companion. Yeah. And good parents and good friends absolutely know how to do that for each other. Don't fix someone. You know, you're very careful with the conversation because you know that you may trigger something. Yeah, just be patient, very patient. And
yes, it's allowing somebody to just talk about how they feel. I interviewed somebody recently and we were talking about trauma and how a lot of us don't actually deal with trauma because we're never really, we might be asked how you feel, but you're feeling just pretty awful, right? You can't even articulate what it is that you're feeling. But if only somebody had sat down and had a chat and said, what's going on then? What's happening then? You know, where's all this come from? What's been going on in your life? And then just maybe you'd have been able to unload some of this. Lending an ear is so important, but not in any judgment, not in any, I am going to help you and you're going to do this and that'll make you feel better. No. In a just a very kind of gentle kind of, I'm here to hear you and hold your hand as you go through this. And I think that is hugely important.
It's hugely important. And I would like to add on to that, and we do it in our training at the Spiritual Companions Trust, that in the training, we actually go, yes, all of us have a mammalian instinct to care for somebody who's vulnerable. And there are awarenesses and strategies that can deepen your sense of empathy and compassion. And this might be absolutely crucial if you're dealing with someone who's in deep trauma or someone approaching end of life, you know, or someone who's in a mental health crisis. You know, that it's more than the normal just being quiet. There's a way of learning how to practice compassion in action in a way that's invisible. It's just talking about it is helpful for people, for definite our students, just hearing about it is good. And folk who are listening may just go, oh, okay, well, William's validating the fact that when I'm just quiet and kind to whoever it is in trouble in my family or my friends, I'm doing something worthwhile. And what I would then say to them, yeah. And in that moment with your friend who's in trouble, when you know you're just being quiet and supportive to them, take a slow, calm breath down into your belly and just soothe yourself. And privately, inside your heart, open your connection to spirit, to God, whatever you call it, right? And just gently know that in the same way as you are, so to speak, lovingly holding the person you're with, spirit, God, goddess, is also lovingly holding you. And there's an extra very beautiful atmosphere and energetic that comes through into the situation that allows for some extra healing and grace.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah, this is going to help a lot of people. And really, I think it kind of brings us to a nice little conclusion. And so therefore, I would just say thank you very, very much for joining me today. Do tell us where people can find out more about you and your work.
Well, the main website is spiritualcompanionsoneword.org, spiritualcompanions.org. And if you want to know more about me, it's williambloom.com. But I'd much rather steer people to spiritualcompanions.org where they can explore. We've got a lot of free resources up there, as well as the diploma itself. The next diploma starts in September. It's online, lasts a year.
Fantastic. Last year, which is a good time. It's not one of those fly-by-night courses where you just kind of go for a weekend and then suddenly you've got a diploma.
No, absolutely not. And you get good tutorial support and all that kind of stuff.
Dr. William Bloom there talking about a wonderful new initiative. And If we've piqued your interest, you might want to check out the Trust's online open evening that's being held on the 14th of June. You'll find the details for that, plus much more besides, on their website, spiritualcompanions.org. Now, the event starts at 7pm UK time, and you'll hear from William himself, as well as the course leader and some of the course tutors. You'll also have the chance to ask some of your own questions. And now it's time to take another short break, but stay tuned for more Alchemy 101 right after these messages. Back after this.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
The station that makes you feel good.
You're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio station. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and I feel I should update you all on how I'm doing using nasal guard this hay fever season. Well, I'm very happy to say it's working very well for me so far. It's so easy to use. And I asked Nasal Guard's co-founder and co-inventor, Kanika Vahi, to tell us more about it.
Nasal Guard works just as simple as a basic magnet. As you know, like charges repel each other and opposite charges attract each other. Our Nasal Guard gel is a positively charged gel that attracts negatively charged airborne particles onto the nose, essentially creating an electrostatic barrier, an invisible shield prior to inhalation and right around your mouth, your upper lip, and your nostril and nasal area. So it helps block out a lot of the pesky and dirty air particles that you see floating around. It's safe for the entire family, and we pride ourselves in the fact that it works on very simple physics.
Yes, and that's the beauty of it, I think. It does work on very, very simple physics.
Right.
So no drugs, no kind of, fancy sounding chemicals going into the making of it. So you're not killing stuff off. You're literally pulling particles out of the air and trapping them. Isn't that right?
That's right. The key component of this product is the trapping and the attracting of the particles prior to inhalation. So they do get trapped around the nasal passages where you're applying the physical gel. And it also has an electrostatic component. So it is attracting the oppositely charged particles. It's very simple.
Yeah, I know. It's brilliant. Brilliant in its simplicity, I think. Now, a lot of people might say, I breathe through my mouth. So it's not going to block that, obviously, but the efficacy is still pretty high.
That's right. You bring up a great point. And it's also important to note that the majority of particles that you do inhale end up going through the nasal passages in the nose. So that's something that is a very important statistic, that the majority of particles that are contributing to a lot of the respiratory symptoms are inhaled through the nose rather than the mouth. So while it's not directed or instructed to be applied, or our topical gel is not instructed to be applied around the nose or around the mouth, rather, it does have a large contribution of blocking and stopping those particles, the airborne particles, from being inhaled through the nasal passages.
Yeah. And I was trying to work out the other day how mm-hmm. I normally breathe. Mm-hmm. And I think I do breathe in through my nose. And then if I'm consciously breathing, I'll breathe in through my nose and out through my mouth. So, except when I just breathed just then, which was through my mouth. But anyway, it is still effective, even though a lot of us will be breathing through our mouths. And yes, I mean, I guess things like pollen they will just filter up through your nose anyway. And that's where the irritation and the allergy symptoms come from.
That's true. The majority of the harmful particles are the reason why, and the reason why people have the majority of the symptoms, such as runny nose or itchy eyes, coughing, sneezing. They're all due to the fact that they are inhaling some of these, either pollen or dust mites, pet dander. Some of the hay fever symptoms are directly correlated with that.
Then what I'm thinking about is, okay, so we talk about nasal guard being great for air travel, being great for people who have allergies. Who else might benefit from this? I'm thinking, you know, it's water-based. So is there any kind of sport or anything where you wouldn't use it? What kind of people would be using this product as a general rule?
You brought up a lot of really great points. I do believe that we like to think that it's universally beneficial because everyone has a nose, everyone breathes. We do believe that it's universally beneficial across the board. The best selling product so far has been the Air Travelers segment, followed by the Pet Lovers. But I will say that there are quite a few school children, parents who buy this for, you know, their entire family. You know, they themselves might be a germaphobe. They would like to pass this on to their kids and make sure they're applying this to help protect themselves and to help block out some of the pesky, dirty airborne particles that are floating around in the majority of daycare or schools. We find that a lot of law enforcement, even whether it's a firefighter, some police officers, they are a lot of our repeat customers. Some people who like to garden or tend to a lawn, they've found, you know, major relief and major benefit from the product line because they're able to resume their regular life and daily activities without being bogged down by, you know, sneezing and watery eyes. They are able to enjoy their garden in peace.
Yeah, which is great. And I was just thinking as you were talking there, I have so many friends who have young children. And they always say, well, they're always saying, you know, on social media or wherever, oh, okay, you know, another day under the duvet because I've got another cold, you know, thank you, children, because kids come back from nursery with all the bugs under the sun. And of course, so it's not just the kids, it's the parents who could be taking nasal guard, not taking nasal guard, using nasal guard, and actually fending off some of these things that might be carried by their kids.
Absolutely. There are quite a few parents who have given us feedback, even teachers who have found us on social media and talk about their own experiences completely organically. They love to spread awareness that there are measures that you can take that don't involve antihistamines or products like Benadryl. There are options that you can take control of and actually prevent rather than cure.
Yeah, which is great. I'm all about no drugs here on my show. So I'm also thinking about, okay, so you're going on holiday. So great for air travel, right?
Right.
You're going on holiday. You've got your nasal guard with you because you've, you know, had it on the plane. You get to, say you're at a resort by the sea. Now it's water-based. So you've got to reapply it, haven't you, if you go for a swim?
We like to instruct and we like to direct our customers to use common sense. And also if they're sweating or getting their nose wet or taking a shower or going for a swim, we like to make sure that they understand that it does need to be reapplied as necessary. And that does include when you're going for a swim. And like I said, if you're working out and sweating it off, you typically would have to be reapplying it. Or if you're blowing your nose, you typically would reapply it afterwards. So that is something to keep in mind. It is a water-based gel, all clean ingredients. We'd like to make sure that people understand that there should not be any drug interactions with any prescription medication. It is over-the-counter and there are no active ingredients. But we do want to make sure that customers understand that there is reapplication every 4 to 6 hours or as often as needed.
Great. That's a good point, actually. Yes, it is over the counter. There are no interactions with any drugs, but you do have to reapply it. And I'm thinking, right, you know, maybe if you're playing any kind of sport, really, and you're sweating and you're, you know, yeah, you'd want to reapply it. And now just thinking about the application of it, you don't need very much at all, do you?
You just need a pin-sized drop. I can demo that. It's very easy. You simply take a pin-sized drop, the tiniest amount. And actually for this, less is more. You want to make sure it's an even application around the nostrils and right around the base of the nose and the upper lip, and you're good to go. It's very easy.
Brilliant. And that tiny, tiny drop really does work. And it's enough to cover. I mean, I have tried it myself and I have to admit that really it goes on really smoothly.
All of the ingredients are cosmetic grade ingredients, so they're safe to use under or over makeup. And we like to consider it our sunscreen because it's obviously meant to be before exposure to or before entering any sort of environment or polluted area. It has to be applied prior to rather than after the fact. So we consider it our sunscreen.
Kanika Vahi there. Now, if you want to try Nasal Guard for yourself, just click on the link on the UK Health Radio homepage for worldwide delivery. And that just about brings us to the end of today's show, brought to you in association with Nasal Guard, the drug-free nasal gel that uses electrostatic technology to block harmful airborne contaminants as well as indoor and outdoor allergens. If you want to find out more about me, then do check out my website, thepracticalalchemist.uk. You'll find my blog there and all the links to my social media, as well as my new YouTube channel, Alternatively Speaking. You'll be able to watch a video version of my chat with William Bloom there too. You'll find out all about my energy clearing work at safehavenhealing.uk. And if that interests you, do book a time for a no-fee chat to see if it's a fit for you. And I can't leave without mentioning the UK Health Radio Awards, which are now in full swing. This year, not only do we have a lineup of the best in health, but you can also vote for your favourite presenter. So do head over to the homepage and click on the awards link to find your favourites. For now, though, it's time to say thank you for listening. Join me next time for more Practical Alchemy. Until then, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale.
Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9th, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.